If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Rover.com, the nation's largest network of neighborhood pet sitters and dog walkers. Go to rover.com/travel and get $20 off your dog's first booking.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Oh,
no. Amateur Traveler, episode 507. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about architecture and the Erie Canal, beef on a weck, and buffalo wings as we go to Buffalo, New York. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We'll hear more from our sponsor, who is Rover.com, but first, let's talk about buffalo. I'd like to welcome back to the show Larissa Milne from changesinlongitude.com, who's come to talk to us about Buffalo, New York. Larissa, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Nice to be back.
And before people hang up on us because they're thinking of the old line from Chorus Line about the person who was going to commit suicide in Buffalo and then they realized that was redundant, you pitched me Buffalo, New York and said you had an amazingly great time there. Why should someone go to Buffalo?
It's a city that will surprise a lot of people. It certainly surprised us. And I think that probably the best thing to do is just to kind of give you a little bit of background on why it's a city worth visiting. Not so much for the sites, we can certainly get into that later, but a little bit of the history as to why it even exists where it does and why it's there. Buffalo is perched on the eastern end of Lake Erie in western New York. And when you think of the Great Lakes as they go across the northern part of the United States in the Midwest, Buffalo is the easternmost point that ships could navigate their way across the Great Lakes. So it was the terminus, basically, until the early part of the 20th century of any ship navigating its way from all the way from Duluth, Minnesota in the far west across the Midwest.
And that is if they didn't want to go over those big waterfalls near there.
Right, exactly. You know, because if you continued, you could keep going, but then you'd be going over Niagara Falls in a barrel. So the ships would end up in Buffalo, so it became a large port. So there was iron ore. You know, we think of the song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald with the iron ore. You know, so there's iron ore going across the Great Lakes. Also, a lot of grain was coming from the northern Midwest, Minnesota. You think about places in Minnesota, General Mills and Pillsbury are all based out there because a lot of wheat grows there. So a lot of grain and iron ore were passing through the Great Lakes, ending up in Buffalo. They needed somewhere to go, and the Erie Canal was constructed to basically get the goods from these ships across the state of New York and down to the New York Harbor. So that's the reason it existed. At one time, around the turn of the 19th to 20th century, it was the eighth largest city in America. So it was a place to be reckoned with. It was, you know, there was a lot of industry. There were, you know, lions of industry there. There was a lot of money. So it was at one time a very large booming city. To kind of put it into context, in 1932, a canal opened called the Welland Canal, which connected Lake Erie to Lake Ontario. So it basically bypassed the Niagara River and Niagara Falls. At that point, ships could then start navigating through to Lake Ontario and up the St. Lawrence Seaway and out to the Atlantic Ocean. So all of a sudden, Buffalo becomes, you know, what was a thriving, important port. It now becomes kind of just a byproduct. A stop maybe on the way, not the final terminus. By knowing that background, it helps to understand when you hear about Buffalo, you know, just like you think about a lot of other northern industrial cities like Detroit or Cleveland, there's a reason they existed at one time and were great thriving cities in what was considered their heyday. And so that was Buffalo's kind of reason for being, that it was this terminus of all this Great Lakes shipping traffic.
Well, you mentioned the Erie Canal. I went to college at Troy, New York, on the other end of that canal. And basically what we learned was that America really learned engineering building the Erie Canal. That when we started that big project back in the 1820s, that mm-hmm. basically we didn't have the knowledge and had to learn the knowledge to do those sort of big projects. And a lot of big projects came then afterwards. Mm-hmm. But then that area also was, you know, that area sort of peaked around that time, peaked a little earlier than Buffalo. Great. So, but why there today? We just said that it peaked earlier and it's
right. It's a city that's, quote, past its prime. But also in keeping with the context of what we've been seeing with cities in the last probably 20 years or so, cities are on the rise again. Mm-hmm. And Buffalo is part of that renaissance, that there's a lot of great infrastructure and bones in a city like Buffalo. And Buffalo, because it was at one time such a very wealthy city, it's got a lot of great architecture. There's some good arts and culture, university scene and what have you. And so what has happened is now that there's kind of this renaissance where people are going back to the cities, there are things there where people were artisans and individuals who are looking to make a difference can kind of infiltrate that infrastructure and repopulate the city. So it has the basis for that. And then on top of all of this, I'll get into, again, some itinerary type stuff in a few minutes. But the other thing that we found there, which was really astonishing, probably more than any site I could name, is that we found the strongest sense of civic pride of any city or any destination I have ever been to in all of my travels in the world. Buffalonians, as they call themselves, are absolutely rabidly intent, you know, and fanatical about their city. They just love the place. The people that live there love it. Even people that were from there and have moved elsewhere still have very strong ties. So there's something actually very contagious about that when you visit a city, when everybody you meet is just thrilled that you're there because they can show you what a great place it is. And of course, since it's had this identity as being the butt of jokes, people are really eager to prove those jokes wrong. So that there's something very, very attractive and infectious mm-hmm. about that. And that's kind of what got us there. When we were looking, we were headed north through New York, and we were looking for places to stay. Our plan was to go visit Niagara Falls because we both of us had visited as children but hadn't been back since. And we thought, oh, well, you know, it looks like Buffalo's along the way. Maybe we can find a place to stay or what have you. And we started researching the city, and we said, you know, it seems like there's a lot more there, actually.
Than just wings.
Yeah, exactly.
Wings and the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes. And so we ended up basing ourselves there for over a week and really didn't spend much time in Niagara Falls at all. It was really an eye-opener, which is why I kept hounding you about doing something about it.
And I'll tell our listeners that the moment that Larissa got me is when she told me the whole town smells like Cheerios.
Yeah, there you go. See? The way that Chris's heart is through his stomach. So
apparently so. There's a reason that it smells like Cheerios.
Yes, it is. Well, I mentioned the thing about all the grain silos and the grain elevators and what have you, mm-hmm. or the grain shipping, excuse me. The entire waterfront is really populated, or a large portion of the waterfront is populated with these big, tall cement cylinders, which are grain elevators and grain silos. And that's because of all the grains that came across the Great Lakes. And there is a large General Mills plant there right at the waterfront in Buffalo that manufactures Cheerios. So all the Cheerios on the east of the Mississippi are manufactured at that particular plant. And so the whole town smells like Cheerios because they're cranking them out day in and day out. And And of course, as you know, now it's not sufficient to just have one type of Cheerio. You got to have like, oh, no, you know, there's like 42 varieties of them now. So there's lots and lots of them there, but that's what buffalo smells like. So there's kind of a nice little grain connection there.
Great. And what other sites should we see while we're in Buffalo?
Well, I think that one of the things to consider, the downtown I mentioned because it was such an important industrial center, the downtown district has been described by many architecture critics as almost like a museum of Art Deco architecture. There are some really wonderful buildings, many of the downtown skyscrapers, if you will, probably about the tallest is probably about 35 stories high, but many of them were built in the city's heyday, you know, in the early part of the 20th century. So they've got this wonderful Art Deco architecture. So you've got, like, you know, all the greats in architecture at the time, Louis Sullivan, another name, Eero Saarinen, most people probably know him, another guy named H.H. Richardson. These were all, anybody who's into architecture will recognize these names. And you can take walking tours around the city and just see some really fantastic buildings and structures and, you know, just architectural detailing around a lot of the facades of the buildings. Actually, a great place to start, no matter what anybody decides to do when they go to Buffalo, a great place to start your visit is to go to City Hall, which in and of itself is a very large Art Deco building. Again, it's probably about 30 stories tall. They offer free tours every day at noon, but I would direct somebody to the website just in case the times have changed since I was last there. And they provide guided tours of the building. And of course, again, because it was built at this time, they're just magnificent architectural details. They take you into the city council meeting room, which has got gorgeous, you know, stained glass ceilings and some that were constructed by Tiffany and, you know, again, beautiful bronzes and things like that. And then they actually, part of the tour, they take you to, there's a cupola on top of the building, and they take you to the top floor where you can look out and you can see all around. And because it is one of the tallest buildings in probably for miles around, you can see quite far in the distance. So you can see out over Lake Erie, you can see the entire waterfront, which is quite scenic. You know, now there are lots of boats and the marinas and what have you. You can see all of those grain elevators with the Cheerios and what have you. And if it's a clear day, if you look north about 20 miles away, you can see the mist of Niagara Falls coming up, which is a pretty cool thing to see in the distance. That's one of the things that I would recommend somebody do just at the start of their visit to Buffalo.
Let's take a break here and hear from our sponsor, Rover.com. We love our dogs, but sometimes the travel bug calls and we have to leave our best friends behind. Rover.com is the nation's largest network of loving and trustworthy pet sitters and dog walkers. Discover and book the perfect pet care for you, your dog, and your budget on Rover.com. Browse profiles, read reviews, and find someone in your neighborhood who offers pet sitting, dog boarding, dog walking, or doggy daycare. Then book and pay all through Rover. It's that easy. With Rover, you can relax. Your dog is in good hands. Rover offers general background checks, and every sitter profile has been individually reviewed and approved. Rover's got you covered with cute photo updates, premium pet insurance, and 24/7 support. Visit rover.com/travel to get $20 off your dog's first booking. Go ahead, find someone who'll love your dog while you're away at rover.com/travel.
You mentioned architecture in the downtown architecture. Is anybody organized that into either a guided or self-guided architecture tour of Buffalo?
There are some tours. I think that we did not take one. We mm-hmm. kind of had a book and we walked around ourselves. There are some people, I think that Context or Viator might have a tour, a walking tour of it. The only one that I'm familiar with because I took it was the tour of City Hall, which is free and just run by the city. But yeah, you could. There are definitely tours that you can walk around. I think there might even be some that are run by the Urban Land Institute because I think that they've had some meetings there because of the city as being such a good example of that type of architecture.
Where to next?
Keeping on the architecture theme, because the architects were there, they were building buildings for all these lions of industry. They also were building homes because these rich folks had to live somewhere. And so there are some lovely homes to go visit, not the least of which there was a young architect who was looking to make his name and was taking commissions left and right in the Buffalo area named Frank Lloyd Wright. So there are several Frank Lloyd Wright homes that can be visited and Frank Lloyd Wright structures that can be seen in and around Buffalo. The largest house, the Graycliff Estate, which is this beautiful estate that's up along Lake Erie, as well as another one called the Martin House Complex. And they're, you know, right along the lines of any other Frank Lloyd Wright structure you've seen, lots of horizontal lines and very arts and crafts looking, but magnificent. And Graycliff, because it was perched right on Lake Erie, kind of up on this bluff, it's just this, you know, wonderful vista that you can go see. So you can tour the homes, you can, you know, you can see the furnishings inside and what have you. So it really, for anybody who's interested in architecture or design, I would recommend doing that.
Excellent.
Some other things that, that kind of fall into architecture, urban planning type of things is the fact that the city has a wonderful park system as well. At the same time when they were commissioning all these great buildings, they were commissioning designers to design lots of green space. And they have something that they call the Emerald Necklace that goes around the city. It was designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, who's the guy that designed Central Park in New York, along with Calvert Vaux. And the city kind of goes out from the north of the downtown area. The residential sections kind of go out like a fan. They're sort of like the spokes on a wheel. The main roads go out that way. And the parks go along these spokes of the wheel. So there's like these really wide boulevards with parks in the middle. And then a mile or so hence, there's this great big ring that goes kind of around the northern quarter of the city and just connects all of these beautiful residential areas by this wonderful green space that rings the city. So there are bike paths and walking trails and just, you know, sidewalks and things. So if you're there, what I would recommend, I'm not a winter person, and Buffalo does get kind of chilly in the winter.
We were going to have to talk about that, yes.
Yeah, we will.
Well, it doesn't just get chilly, but also gets a lot of snow, a lot of lake effect snow in Buffalo.
It does. It does get snow. And, you know, that's one of those things that Buffalonians, they just deal with it, just like any other place where somebody's at a ski resort or whatever. They just plow the roads and they get right on moving.
Yeah, you could get probably 3 feet of snow in Buffalo and be in better shape than 1 inch of snow in Washington, D.C., just because they're used to it.
Yeah. Exactly. And they just kind of live that way and they deal with it. And what's one of the things that's interesting, I've noticed this about other places in the country, is they'll tell you that they don't get as much snow as Syracuse, which is, you know, what, like 100 miles, 150 miles east of the city. And apparently that's true. You know, apparently Syracuse gets more snow for whatever lake effect that comes down from Lake Ontario where it is. But it's just an interesting kind of reference. But they don't get as much as Syracuse. Just I ran into a similar kind of analogy when we were in Seattle. And I noticed that people from Seattle, when you talk about the rain, they say that they don't get as much rain as Chicago gets. So, I guess, you know, people kind of know that. But yeah, there's no doubt that they get a lot of snow, but they deal with it. I have not spent time there in the winter, but I do know that they have a lot of winter activities surrounding the lake and you know, winter carnivals and what have you. But I would suggest going to their website. They actually, one of the things that I would say is the Visit Buffalo Niagara website is one of the better destination websites that I've seen. In fact, it was probably that website that got us to first visit because it was just so well done. And they really cover a lot of the attractions in the city.
And as long as you're referring to that website, I actually want to go back to one of the things we asked about earlier, is there is on the website, and I imagine a in paper form that you can pick up from them, a Buffalo on Foot that does do a self-guided walking tour of historic downtown Buffalo, in answer to my previous question.
Okay.
It's actually a wonderful, I've been looking at it here online, but it's a wonderful guide. Mm-hmm. So definitely recommend that. And one thing I want to say about lake effect snow, just so we can put this into context, I have a roommate in college who grew up nearby Buffalo in Jamestown, New York. So we're still talking about near the lake. And they routinely plow the snow up to the telephone wires in the wintertime. So, you know, we're talking about a fair amount of snow in that kind of area, even if it's less than Syracuse.
Yeah, I know. And it, for those of us that don't come from snowy areas, it's a huge amount. They will say, though, what's interesting is actually the city proper gets less snow than, for some reason, than the towns that are maybe about 20 minutes further south. For example, they might get 6 inches, the towns immediately south of them, because of the way the winds and the currents go or something, will get 20 inches. And I don't quite understand the meteorological reasoning for that, but that's something that, again, they're quick to point out.
Well, and there is a guide to Buffalo in winter, if you want to find that also on the visitbuffaloniagara.com website.
Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of a couple of quick snapshots of things to do within the city. The other thing, the city does have this wonderful old world kind of mindset because of the timing. There is a baseball stadium. There's a triple A team that's got a stadium, the Buffalo Bisons. It's mm-hmm. right on the lake, which is a nice thing to do. Now, the old stadium, the stadium that's there was built maybe about 15 or 20 years ago. The old original stadium was one of those really neat old baseball stadiums with the poles and things, kind of looked like something like Fenway Park or what have you. And anybody who's ever seen the movie The Natural would recognize it. That's the stadium that was used in The Natural when that was filmed. And unfortunately, that got taken down. But still within the stadium is the Buffalo Bisons Hall of Fame. And you can take a tour. Anybody who's a sports buff and a baseball fan would like touring that. It's a small museum, and it's basically once you just get into the stadium, you just go in. There's no extra admission. My husband, who's a baseball fan, recognized all sorts of names of people that had passed through at one time or another. Anybody who's a baseball fan, I think it probably would be a fun thing to do, to just go to the Bison Stadium and watch a minor league game. You know, on a beautiful summer evening, as the sun is setting and you're looking out over Lake Erie and watching this ball game, it's really a nice thing to do. Going back to the riverfront and the Visit Buffalo Niagara website, one of the things that the city has really embraced is taking advantage of its position on Lake Erie at the juncture of the Erie Canal and the Buffalo River. So there's a lot of water frontage in Buffalo, and the city has really taken advantage of it. Now, there are marinas, there's a lot of urban development that's gone up with, you know, mixed-use shops and restaurants and that sort of thing. And the other thing that they've done, which is kind of clever, I think, is, you know, they've got all of these grain silos and grain elevators that have populated the waterfront for 100 years or so. These things are really rock solid. You know, they're very, very thick concrete structures that are, you know, 80 or 100 feet tall. And they just realized that trying to knock them down is just, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make financial sense. It's just crazy. So rather than just ignore them, they've just kind of embraced that as being part of their waterfront. They now hold lots of festivals and functions in and around these grain silos. They have concerts in them. They've turned some of them into climbing walls. You know, so there's a lot of neat stuff that goes on surrounding these grain silos. And again, every spring and summer and into the fall, as the weather's nice, there are always festivals of all different kinds taking place at the waterfront. So I would suggest for anybody who's planning on going, again, check that website, because you'll get the latest and greatest as to what's going on, and you'll be able to really enjoy the waterfront there.
What surprised you about Buffalo?
The thing that probably surprised me the most, I would say, was the fact that the people were so incredibly hometown proud. But I would say the other thing that surprised me was, from a standpoint of food, you know, we joked about the wings before. You know, everybody knows chicken wings. While we were there, we never even got around to having chicken wings because we were so busy trying all kinds of other interesting foods that we tried while we were there.
And just for our listeners who may not be from the United States, who may not be familiar with buffalo wings, they're fairly well known in the U.S. here, just over the last, I don't know, 15 years, I would say they've gone coast to coast, but they're basically a very spicy chicken wing called buffalo wings, not made from buffalo, obviously, since buffalo have no wings and we have no buffalo.
Yep.
But they're served with quite often a blue cheese dressing or something like that, or a ranch dressing or something. But I do enjoy buffalo wings. But what did you
we
have
had
instead?
Hot dogs. Real gourmet.
Okay.
You know? I happen to really love hot dogs, but I love a grilled hot dog, a hot dog that's made on a charcoal grill. And in Buffalo, that's how hot dogs are prepared. They're not made on a griddle. They're not made in a frying pan. They're not boiled or steamed. Virtually everywhere that sells hot dogs has a charcoal grill, not a gas grill. It's a grill that uses Kingsford, or even better, hardwood charcoal, to make their hot dogs. Oftentimes, they're like foot-long hot dogs. They're kind of works of art, and they're kind of a point of pride in Buffalo. And it's interesting that the wings, the buffalo wing kind of concept, has sort of transcended, you know, bar snacks all across America, but for some reason, the hot dogs aren't as well known. Once I discovered that, I became, you know, kind of manic about trying as many hot dogs as I possibly could.
Was there one place you thought had the best hot dogs in Buffalo?
The place that we liked the best was a hot dog place up along the river called Old Man River. It's just a hot dog stand. You can sit down, but it's, you know, not particularly fancy. They make the French fries from scratch. You know, they cut the fresh potatoes right there, and then they're grilling up these foot-long hot dogs over hardwood charcoal flames. And we thought that was the best that we had had. There's a mini chain, if you will, in Buffalo called Ted's, which most people associate with as the hometown favorite of hot dogs. I thought they were good, but I liked this Old Man River better.
Okay. And were there other things we should try while we're there besides the hot dogs, the wings, and the Cheerios?
Yeah, hot dogs, wings, Cheerios. The other thing that you'll see, which is very popular there, is a sandwich called Beef on Weck. Mm-hmm. And what that is a roast beef that's served on a Weck roll, which is a roll that is of German origin. It's kind of a cross between a pretzel and a hard roll. It's a roll that's got like a round hard roll that's got salt, coarse salt on top of it, as well as caraway seeds and I think one or two other types of seeds. And it's a very traditional German style roll, and that's a popular sandwich that's served in Buffalo. The Beef on Weck.
Apparently coming from the German roll Kimmelweck, which I don't know. I didn't know that in Germany.
Yeah,
but
that's what it comes from. I had forgotten that term, yeah. But that's a very popular thing. And then what you will see scattered around town is a lot of Eastern European foods, because there was because of the mills and what have you that populated Buffalo. At that time, there was a lot of immigration from Eastern Europe. So there are a lot of Polish, not so much restaurants, but markets and bakeries. Well, not so many bakeries anymore. There's really only one, but some other Czech Eastern European type of food. So you can go to restaurants and find or markets and find things like pierogies and babkas and stuff like that. So that's a popular thing to see. We actually, when we were there, we visited a bakery. There was at one time there were many, many Polish bakeries scattered throughout Buffalo. You know, the sort of thing that, you know, every neighborhood had their own, just like in certain neighborhoods in New York, there's an Italian bakery that bakes Italian bread. In Buffalo, there were Polish bakeries, and they would bake things like babka. And for those, again, that don't know what it is, a babka is kind of a sweet bread, often baked with cinnamon or fruit. And, you know, people typically eat it with coffee, or they might have it with dessert, but it's not really a cake. It's kind of a cross between a cake and a bread. And it's a very popular in Eastern European foods. In fact, probably most Eastern European countries have some version of a babka, or a pyatchik is another word for it. But those are very popular in Buffalo. And as is rye bread, which is also a very popular Polish type of bread. There, at one time, as I mentioned, there were bakeries scattered all over, and little by little, they kind of closed as people moved out of town or retired or what have you. And there's a neighborhood that's down near the river that was an old working class neighborhood, kind of a Polish/Irish ethnic neighborhood that had fallen on hard times and is actually now kind of gentrifying in the last 10 years because it's adjacent. This particular area called the First Ward is adjacent to the waterfront. So now there are a lot of speculators coming in and buying up these vacant storefronts and what have you. But there's a bakery that I absolutely had to go visit while I was there, because the name of it it's called Mazurek's Bakery. And that won't mean anything to anybody except for people in my family, because that happens to be my maiden name, and which is an unusual Polish name. And I bear no relation, but the fact that there was a bakery that was named, had the same name as me, meant I had to go there. We actually got to go and visit and spend some time with the folks there and learn quite a bit about the bakery. And it was been taken over by a couple of young guys who bought it and, you know, are looking to speculate in the area and grow the business again. And it's kind of great to see a whole new generation of people determined to carry on in that tradition. And they make this fabulous rye bread every day that comes out of this 90-year-old brick oven, you know, just really neat old stuff. And so anybody who's visiting and likes to see that kind of old ethnic eateries, I would suggest maybe trying to look for Mazurek's Bakery in the First Ward. And they also make really good jelly donuts. So anybody who likes a good jelly donut, I would suggest that they stop by.
Excellent. How about getting in touch with culture in Buffalo?
Again, because of the vast amount of money that was there, there's some really interesting cultural things to visit. At the highbrow end, they have a wonderful art gallery there called the Albright Knox Gallery, which is on the northern side of the city and has really a fantastic collection of all different types of art, but largely contemporary 20th century art. They have some wonderful examples. And in fact, they have a massive, massive Jackson Pollock painting called Convergence, which is, you know, just one of those things that anybody who's ever seen photographs or images of Jackson Pollock, which kind of just looks like paint splattered on a screen.
Right.
Once you see it in person, it's just so massive, and it's one of those jaw-dropping experiences. And because of the way it's sited in the museum, it's on this wall. You can walk right up to it. You probably could touch it. You probably don't want to. You probably get in trouble, but you can get that close to it. And so it's a really interesting experience to be able to walk up to something that's, you know, 12 feet wide by 8 feet tall and look at it up close and see how thickly the paint was put on, and then step back and try and get, you know, these varying perspectives. And the museum houses a lot of other rotating exhibits and some really good top quality art. And so I would suggest anybody who's interested in that type of thing, certainly make a stop at the Albright Knox Gallery. It's located right around the ring of that emerald necklace that I was talking about. So it's a nice opportunity to get into around some parkland in one of the nicer residential neighborhoods. So that works out really well. Kind of keeping with the arts and crafts theme and the arts and crafts movement in general, we talked about Frank Lloyd Wright, but arts and crafts were quite popular in northwestern New York around the early part of the 20th century. And there's a town called Aurora, New York, which is probably about 15 or 20 minutes just east of the downtown area. It's just a nice, you know, kind of a small suburban town, but it's got a very nice little downtown and, you know, kind of a cute little main street and what have you. But it also houses something called the Roycroft movement there. And it's an art studio movement that was all part of this arts and crafts movement. And it's still in existence. And people who are interested, you can tour studios. People can actually take classes there in ceramics and all sorts of decorative arts. It's really pretty interesting for anybody that likes that type of thing. You know, just a really eye-opening experience, and kind of helps put a lot of the furnishings and architecture into perspective when you see all the decorative arts that was accompanying that. That's a pretty cool thing. And then moving forward a little bit in the music kind of area of things, one of the areas of town, there's a neighborhood kind of on the northern end of the downtown that's sort of a funky bohemian kind of district. And one of Buffalo's favorite daughters has spent a lot of time developing a presence there. Ani DeFranco is from Buffalo, and she still has her record label and company there, Righteous Babe Records, which is housed in, and she's got a production facility and a theater or a performance venue, if you will, in an old church that's on the northern side of town. So that kind of gives you a little bit of that edgy, more contemporary vibe. So for people that are looking for something a little bit more 21st century kind of culture, you certainly have it with Ani DeFranco and Righteous Babe Records there. And so there are concerts and lots of activities there. That's a great environment there. And the neighborhood that it's adjacent to is something called Elmwood Village. That's what I was alluding to. And that's the kind of neighborhood that, you know, in a place like San Francisco, it would be Haight-Ashbury or something funky like that. Now, in a town like San Francisco or in Greenwich Village in New York, it would be much larger because they're just bigger cities. But in Buffalo, Elmwood Village is the place where you have the independent bookstores, the funky record shops, the brew pubs, and you know, restaurants that are sort of a little bit independent and edgy, that kind of place. So that's a great place to go and get a little bit of the funky, edgier flavor of Buffalo.
Excellent. You were talking about music, and I noticed as I was perusing the Buffalo site, the other thing that caught my eye was one of their grand old theaters, the Shays Performing Arts Center, one of those classic, beautiful, grand theater sort of style performance venues. I still love to see when cities have kept those or restored those to their former glory.
Yeah, and I think that what you'll see in the coming years is as the more that the cities kind of stay in the forefront of people kind of looking to move back and historic preservation and what have you, more and more, because Buffalo is virtually a museum of some of these early 20th century buildings, that they're going to continue to renovate and restore and continue to use these things, which is a great boon to anybody in the area when you're going to it to see things there.
I've just been recently reading or listening to, I guess, the audiobook of Bryson's latest book on England. It's a follow-up to the book that he did 20 years ago, and it's The Road to Little Dribbling, which is an odd name, but he's an odd author. But it's interesting because he's been talking about a lot of the British cities and how they've diminished since he wrote about them 20 years ago. And yet I agree with you that so many cities in the U.S., if you compare them to what they were 20 years ago, they're so much better now mm-hmm. than they were then. So it just seems like urban renewal in the U.S. is heading in a different direction, at least in many cities, many of the cities that I'm familiar with, yeah. including where I live, San Jose. You just didn't go down there 20 years ago.
So. We were in a much more suburban mindset, I think, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now when young people finish college, they want to live in a city, and that's what they're doing. And so you see that in a place like Buffalo. And because it has the infrastructure that can support it, it's an easy place to do that, you know. Cost of living is relatively inexpensive. You can get some great apartments in neat old buildings and that sort of thing. So that all kind of feeds on itself. And then you've got this lively culture that's there. Yeah, it's a great, great opportunity to see that.
We talked about times of year. Buffalo might be a little easier to get around in the summertime. It sounded like that's what you were recommending, although mm-hmm. they certainly have winters there. And as long as you're prepared for it, it could be an interesting time. But is there a particular day or festival or something that you would recommend being in Buffalo?
I actually don't have a recommendation along those lines. I think that there are just so many things that go on there that, depending on what you're interested in, you can find it over the course of the summer. I just think that, you know, there's constantly something that's going on, whether it's music related or food related. There may be some things that they're featuring on the website, but I haven't looked at it in the last couple of days. So
okay.
It's not like I'm thinking, oh, the Montreal Jazz Festival or something
right,
like that.
Sure. Any particular locals you met who really come to your mind as the most memorable?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would have loved to have met Annie DeFranco, but I didn't meet her. I think some of these young people that were working, that were starting these businesses or, you know, kind of moving back into these areas, the fellow that had just purchased Mazurik's Bakery, which was a family bakery for, you know, 80 years mm-hmm. or so. And the fellow was going to retire. And I don't think he thought there was any kind of a value in his business yet. This young guy, Ty Reynolds, said, I really want to make a go of this because I love Buffalo and I want to make it happen. Really, you know, a lot of young people like that. That were really kind of behind that. That was kind of the mindset. Some of these restaurant owners and things I met, I actually don't remember their names off the top of my head, but they were very, very bullish on their town. And that was really, I thought, again, when you're looking at a young person who's somebody who's 25 years old, who's just saying, this is where I'm staying. You know, I grew up here, I went to college here, and I'm going to make my life here. You know, across the board, that's what I saw. And that's what, to me, made it a memorable place to be.
Any warning you would give before someone goes to Buffalo, you should know, and we've talked about snow.
Not really. I think that unless they're particularly into winter events, they probably would enjoy it more from May through maybe September, October. And it is a northern industrial city. So it's not going to be picture postcard pretty in every mm-hmm. neighborhood. And there are some very industrial kind of neighborhoods, and there's some gritty sections. But I wouldn't say it's not a safe place. I didn't feel like it was anything dangerous or anything like that. So I don't think you really need to worry that way. There is a bridge right in Buffalo that takes you right across the river to Canada. So you'd probably need to be prepared to have your passport because you're pretty close there. You know, you don't want to get on the wrong ramp. If you don't have your passport with you, that could be a little complicated. But I think other than that, there's not really any big cautions, I would say. I don't think you'll commit any faux pas. With one exception, I think that you really don't want to order buffalo chicken wings, even chicken wings. They just call them wings. It's, you know, one of those things every local area, you know, as you know, I'm from Philadelphia. There's certain etiquette that goes with cheesesteaks.
Sure, sure.
Same thing with the wings. From what I understand, they just call them wings. That's something to keep in mind.
So that's like the old joke, what do they call Chinese food in China?
Yeah.
Food.
They call it food.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we mentioned Niagara Falls. Certainly most of us, if we're getting that close, are going to do a day trip out to Niagara Falls also while we're there. Are there other day trips that you would recommend in the area?
Well, that city of Aurora that I mentioned, which isn't really all that far, I think you can spend a day in that little town. That's a really cute little downtown. President Millard Fillmore was from there, so his home was there. And there's this really, you know, really neat downtown with an old movie theater, just kind of cool to walk around, and this incredible general store. I think it's called Vidler's, which is this five and dime that, you know, is the five and dime that everybody should have, because it takes up about seven storefronts and kind of ambles on in this sort of organic growth kind of way, that there's just, you know, anything to be had can be gotten in this little general store. So that's a really neat day trip to take. Some of the Frank Lloyd Wright sites, like Greycliff, which is out by the lake, and there's some other architectural homes that you can see along the lake south of town, which is a really nice drive to take. You can just kind of take this lakefront road that is on this bluff that overlooks the lake. And from time to time, you can't always see the lake from there, but there are parks along the way and marinas. You can go down about 20 miles outside of town, you know, and just kind of look back and see the city skyline in the distance, and it's pretty gorgeous. You know, you're in this marina with all these boats, and it's just very, very pretty. So, you know, anybody who's ever spent any time in any of the Great Lakes knows how pretty that can be, north of Chicago, or, you know, along Lake Michigan, anywhere, something like that. So I would recommend doing that, which is also a nice thing to do. But, you know, there's one thing I realized. We've been talking about a few things. There's a major historic event that just somehow, as we got talking, I somehow glossed over. And I think I should mention it because it's something that's unique to Buffalo, which involves the Teddy Roosevelt inaugural site.
Okay.
Buffalo is hosting the Pan American Exhibition in 1901, and it was there mm-hmm. that President William McKinley was assassinated by an anarchist. And so right. Teddy Roosevelt had to get sworn in as president while in the city of Buffalo. And so the home where he was inaugurated has been preserved as a National Historic Site, and it's called the Teddy Roosevelt Inaugural Site. And it's a great site to go visit. You can kind of walk around. You can see where the inauguration happened. You know, considering what inaugurations are, where they're usually on the Capitol steps and there's, you know, thousands of people around, this was just done in an office right, in this right. home. And that's a pretty cool site. Anybody who's interested in American history and politics, and certainly politics, American politics is very much in the news right now. To see that and think about that, that's a pretty interesting sight to see. So I would definitely recommend someone going to see that if they're interested in history.
Excellent. You mentioned Millard Fillmore being the last also of the presidents we had that was neither a Republican nor a Democrat, the last uh-huh. of the Whig Party. Also, the anti-immigration party, which we called at that time the Know-Nothing Party, but maybe we should bring that back. But well, that's another whole other story.
Yeah.
Anything else we should know before we go to Buffalo, before we get to last four questions?
Just that you should go. I think it'll really surprise you, and you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Buffalo.
The fact that everybody loves their city so much. They're just so crazy about their hometown, and everybody just stays there forever because they think it's the best place in the world.
You're standing in the prettiest spot in Buffalo. Where are you standing on? What are you looking at?
It would probably be the park right outside the Albright Knox Gallery. That's part of that Frederick Law Olmsted Park, looking at that gallery.
Excellent. And finish this thought. You really know you're in Buffalo when?
You close your eyes and smell Cheerios.
There we go. For those of us west of the Mississippi, where are our Cheerios coming from?
Shame on me. I don't know the answer to that.
Someone has to write me and tell me where my Cheerios are coming from.
Yeah, my guess would be Minneapolis, where General Mills is based.
Ah, could be. Okay. I'll be heading there in May. I'll have to
yes,
look for
that. In fact, I think I'll see you there. So that will be nice.
And lastly, if you had to summarize Buffalo, New York in just three words, what three words
better
would you
use? Better than you'd expect, or better than expected.
There we go. Now we got it down to
made
three
me
words.
Wordsmith there, didn't you, Chris?
Excellent. And our guest again has been Larissa Milne. And Larissa, where can people read about your travels?
They can read about our travels at our blog, Changes in Longitude, which is changesinlongitude.com. And we also have a weekly travel column in the Philadelphia Inquirer newspaper, which is also online at philly.com. So they can find us there as well.
If you enjoyed listening to Larissa, you can listen to Larissa and Michael, her husband, talking about Philadelphia earlier, I think sometime last year on this program, having written the book on Philadelphia tourism. Yep. Larissa, thanks so much for coming back and telling us about your love for Buffalo, New York.
Thanks, Chris. And thank you for listening to me and letting me speak about it. I know that you kind of smirked when I first suggested it.
There was some smirkage, I will admit.
Hopefully I've converted you and you'll go take a visit.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
This has been a longer episode, and I have to pack and get ready to go down to Carmel with my wife. We're going down and experiencing one of the hotels down there. I'll be writing about it on the blog. So with that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram as Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.